CKUT Radio.
Radio.
Sound waves in the air.
CKUT.
Montreal, Canada.
CKUT.
Good evening. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, the show about theater on the radio, from drama to musicals to burlesque to comedy and everything in between. I'm your host, Sarah DeA, recording from home on November 19th, 2020. On tonight's show, my guests. Sophie G and Shadia Kikonjo of Habibi's Angels commission Impossible on the many complications about creating a show about diversity.
We want to be able to talk about everything. We don't just want to talk about, like, our cultural identity. Like, that's not what we think about 24/7.
Dancer Heather Ma on recreating her grandmother's life story in Pomegranate, her first major solo show. At the age of 60.
What I find the most fascinating is it comes back to me. What is different, of course, when I was creating it, it's not like when you're 20 is where I want to repeat something for 3 hours in rehearsal. So I get to what my body can do. I find what my body can do and how much my energy can give. And I really work with that.
And Mainline's Kenny Struli taking his story of growing up in the country to the actual farm.
For me, it was also sort of showing them what I do in a daily basis. You know, like, this is the life of an artist. You know, I've seen the life of a farmer, but they've never really witnessed the life of an artist in front of them, you know, and understanding the process that, like, I can't tell you the number of times my dad, after we shot in August, he was like, okay, so when is it ready? And I was like, well, let's not, it's taking time, Dad. He was just like, well, that makes sense. Come on, let's just make it happen.
Before we begin, though, an important note. Two of the shows we are going to learn about tonight are due to be performed next week to very small audiences of about 24 people or less. That's Habibi's Angels at La Chapelle in Pomegranate at the Mai. This is when red zone restrictions are supposed to lift for Montreal and surrounding areas, which means tentatively that venues, cinemas, and museums, as well as gyms, can reopen. But we are not sure if it will get the go-ahead. I am recording this in the afternoon of November 19th. As you know, CKUT has been closed since March because of the pandemic, so instead of doing the show live, I pre-record and edit the show from home every week. At 5 o'clock today, there is a press conference with the Premier and his health and education ministers and the head of public health. By the time you are listening, we will have heard their directives for how people can celebrate Christmas and New Year's Eve, as well as possible changes to the school break. Now, there might also be an extension of the closures in Montreal, as coronavirus case counts have not really gone down in the past few weeks since lockdown restarted. So it's important to remember that the conversations you will hear tonight were recorded earlier this week, with the artists unsure of whether their live shows would be able to go ahead. As you will hear, this has been a source of anxiety and uncertainty. Some of them have contingency plans, and some are ambivalent about live shows. By all appearances, they take a lot of precautions to keep cast and crew safe, as well as audience members. Now, listening on Thursday evening, you will know what is expected to happen next week. But right now, as I'm recording, it is still officially up in the air. I apologize for any confusion, and I hope you enjoy tonight's episode of Upstage. Heather Ma is a dancer and choreographer based in Montreal who's worked for years on various creative projects. She is also a yoga teacher and wellness coach. But this month, Heather is getting ready to do something brand new, her first major solo work. It's called Pomegranate, and it has grown from a short piece she first presented back in January 2018. It's a personal and symbolic piece. Heather tells the story of her grandmother, a woman she only knows through a few broad biographical strokes. Born in China at the end of the 19th century, her grandmother came to Canada as a teenager, though she later returned to her country of origin, where she eventually died at the age of 60. And that happens to be Heather's age today. For her, dance is a way of expressing life and humanity. And here, in Pomegranate, Heather delves into themes of migration and connection and so much more. As you will hear, this show has been delayed a handful of times already, part of what it is to be living and creating in a pandemic. Heather Ma spoke to me earlier this week as she was getting ready to present the piece to a tiny test audience at the MAI. Hello, Heather. Welcome to Upstage. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty great considering everything that's going on these times for everyone. But yeah, I'm great, Sarah. Thank you.
This is a very exciting time for you, though, because it is your first major solo that you're working on. And this is like this is a big deal.
It really is for me. That is quite true. Thank you for recognizing that. I think anybody working in the theater or trying to do a show or, you know, other places too, as we know, restaurants, we're doing our best to continue or stopping and waiting for things to be a little clearer about how to direct ourselves. However, what I decided to do, I've already been canceled twice. So this week I was supposed to give shows in May, and then we were supposed to have shows this week. So what we decided to do with my team, a fantastic team, should I mention them?
Yeah, of course.
So we have on lights, we have Marc Parent, we have the composer is Alexander McSween, costumes, image, and makeup is Angelo Varsetti. Then we have Lee Arnold working on the régie, running the board. Marion Brien, who is the director of production. And Francine Arsenault helping with communications. We have a really great team and the whole crew at the Bay. I have Bernard Hébert of Cima Obscura, Cima Claire Obscura doing my videos. So I have a really great team, and we all decided to come into the theater anyways and to do our work. And so we're doing our best, and we're hoping that, once again, I have a third extension that maybe we'll have shows next week. We're waiting to see what the government says. I think it's challenging for everyone to just kind of really stay focused in the moment. And that's what I'm doing. So, yes, also it's my first solo of an entire evening that I've produced myself. It's a big learning mountain.
No pressure, Heather. Oh my goodness. I'm wondering, you say that you like to be in the present, and as a performer, as a creator, is there anything that you use to keep coming back to that? Are you someone who meditates? Or I know that you're multidisciplinary, like you have, you do yoga as well as martial arts, right? So I'm not sure if that also factors in for you.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, and I work a lot also as, not to plug myself or anything, but I also work as I have a psychology degree, and now I do some personal coaching as well. But just to say, to answer the question about meditation, is I work with people a lot with breathing, meditation, yin yoga or relaxing yoga to really help calm down and concentrate and focus. However, what's really interesting is as a performer, I've always used meditation and breathing to help focus. But really what helps focus the most is the work.
Wow.
So it's really, and you know, a lot of dancers and actors, I guess, do this too as well. I've worked with actors before, not myself as an actor, but with, you know, in groups where there are actors, and had small acting parts. And, you know, really what we do to focus in, maybe everybody has their own personal little rituals. I do have those rituals of, you know, I have to warm up my body, I have to focus my mind, but really what helps focus the most is the work you're doing. So you really concentrate on what it is you have to do. And as I'm getting ready, I just keep, athletes do this too, just I keep going over and over and over particular sections of the work. I try to focus in on, you know, how something has to travel through my body or through a state, and that really helps, yeah.
Speaking with performer and choreographer Heather Ma, working on Pomegranate, coming to the Mai. Fingers crossed things go as planned or as Heather would like to go. Let's delve into the story itself. This is interesting because when we were speaking before I hit record, I said, this is about your family history and the stories. And you said, actually, it's because I have no stories. So this is about your grandmother. Tell me about her.
So I guess I say I have no stories. I do have small stories, but my grandmother died before I was born. And my grandmother was brought, she traveled to Canada at the age of 15. So she was with a family who traveled, brought her here. I decided actually not even to do that research to know more about her. My father never told me more than that basically she was from Macau. I don't know exactly where. I don't know anything about her family. What I know was she traveled to Canada at the age of 15 to work her family. And then when she, after 5 years living and working with his family, she ended up marrying my grandfather, mm-hmm. who was the man who had brought her over here. So after that, she had 7 children. She lived here in Canada. She became a wife. I just let my imagination kind of go with that. From basic migration stories, like a lot of migration stories that I've read about Denise Chong and Amy Tan, and the struggles and the triumphs, I guess, if you can use that word, that people had living in Canada at the turn of the century then. So she came here in 1911. And, you know, there was a lot of prejudice still in British Columbia for the Chinese. So I don't think it was always easy. They were still that. There was. I won't go into that. Let's not go into that. But what happened to me was I imagined some of the things she had to get through, having been a young girl to adjust, then marrying, then having 7 children. And then at a fairly young age, I guess it would have been about 16 or 17 years after she got married. So she would have been about 30. Yes, she was 35. Her husband died. She had to return to China in the village. The Sino-Japanese War broke out in 1937, and she never left there. My father is a kind of he's a war hero, because one of the things he did was he joined the Americans, the Flying Tigers, to try and save, amongst others, my grandmother from the village and the war, but he never got out with her. So she died there at the age of 60, which is how old I have turned this year as I'm premiering this piece.
Wow.
And so it's just an interesting parallel. It's the age that she died in China. And what I've created in Pomegranate is is my own story made of images of what I imagine of that journey was. And let me say metaphorically as well as maybe physically. And as a movement piece, as a dance piece, I've really inspired myself from imagining her as a young girl, as a woman suffering, as a woman living really deep things, like the pomegranate represents as a symbol. I don't know if you looked up or you know anything, but this
there's a lot of there's a lot of stories that come with the pomegranate. Yes. It's iconic.
Exactly. Well, so just briefly, for the Chinese, it can represent fertility and abundance. Because, you know, when you open up, it's full, full, full of seeds.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful. It's a big red, you know, seedy fruit. So it represents fertility and abundance, which she, you know, she had 7 children. She lived abundance. But in the Jungian psychoanalysts, the symbolism coming from the Greeks as well, it represents Persephone, Demeter, Hades, which so it's the underworld and the springtime and the above world, the beauty. So it's also the ability of this soul to have been able to go, to have been brought down into the depths, the under the world, the darkness, but to be able to rise back up and travel between both worlds. So it's a little bit about suffering and rejuvenation. And so it also symbolizes rejuvenation and resurrection after great suffering. And so I like all of that. It really inspired me for the dramatic trajectory of the piece.
There's so much depth there, Heather. I'm also loving the fact you mentioned you're telling your grandmother's story. She passed away at 60. This is the same age you are as you're putting on this performance. Is it a challenge to be, and not just any performance, but as we mentioned at the start, this is your first solo. It's your first major piece that you're choreographing and performing in. And, you know, is it difficult to be doing this at this age, or is there like anything surprising, like pleasantly surprising, that comes from working on this, you know, in this decade?
So you mean this decade of my life?
Yeah.
Is that what you mean? Oh, yes. So, yeah.
Compared to someone who might be doing this in their 20s or 30s, right? Which I just think is what an audience might assume, right? This is different for them.
Well, so that's what's really interesting is I don't know how it would be for all 60-year-olds. but most of my life, that's what I did, was I danced. There was 7 years where I stopped and I studied, but I kept physical, so I was still doing martial arts to keep myself in shape. And what is the most interesting, I think you said, was there a surprise? Or I don't know if it was a surprise, but what I find the most fascinating is it comes back to me. What is different, of course, when I was creating it, it's not like when you're 20 is where I want to repeat something for 3 hours in rehearsal. So I get to what my body can do. I find what my body can do and how much my energy can give. And I really work with that. But now that I've created my piece, I'd have to say, it sounds strange, performance-wise, I don't feel any different. However, definitely if I was in creation as a young person working for somebody else, would probably be really different. I mean, in the last 15 years or so, not 15, maybe the last 13 years, I've been working with other people. So, of course, they've been working with me knowing I'm a senior dancer artist. But I would say that the other thing, too, that's really interesting is, if I can use the word, if I dare use the word maturity, is, because I'm not saying I'm mature, but I, you know, you just start to make choices and stay calm about them. Whereas when you're younger and you're dancing, it's really about a little bit more, even if you don't realize it then, is about proving yourself. So even, you know, my God, how could I have forgotten to say this? I knew there was somebody really important. My rehearsal director is Marc Boivin, the master teacher dancer extraordinaire. He said to me the other day, you know, he said, Heather, he said, you know, you're 60, and he said, I'm watching you, and he said, you're dancing, and he said, just go for it. He goes, you've got it in your body, this experience. So, you know, I think there's a part of me that is being careful, because I have lots of bobos.
Yes.
You don't want to see what I look like when I wake up in the morning. It takes me longer to warm up. But that's what he said. He said, you know, you're doing this, so, you know, go for it. So I have to, of course, it's different. When you're young, you have almost, if you become a dancer, it's almost because you have that much energy. When you're 60, you don't have that much energy. But maybe if you're dancing at 60, it's because you have a little bit more. But there's lots of people at 60 that, you know, do marathons and all that. I couldn't do that, but I can still perform. Yeah, I feel it. And I hope I feel it. No, I don't want to say too much. I haven't showed it in front of people yet, but I'm feeling good, Sarah. Yes.
I'm so glad to hear that. And I've got a smile on my face just hearing you talk about your art and what it means to you. And to be able to do this, you know, at this age, quote unquote, for some people, it would be an obstacle. But as you say, you are a dancer. What is the plan right now? We're talking on the 16th of November. What is the plan next week? You're hoping to do this live, depending on if the government regulations lift. Are you anticipating that going through? Are you nervous that there might be a cancellation?
Really great question. Let's say about 3 or 4 weeks ago when we made the decision to go, when I say we, because I mean there's not just me, right? There's that whole team I mentioned. So, with this year, when we decided to try for, when we got canceled for the week of the 16th, and we said, do we go for the 24th? My first reaction was, oh my God, I don't know if I can take another cancellation, all this work. But then there was a little tiny, tiny angel in my head, or maybe double, that said, what if it opens on the 24th and then you don't do the show? So I said, you know what? Let's go into the theater, do the 2 weeks. And honestly, what I'm doing is I'm giving it my all, like today, tomorrow, every single day that we're going to go up until next week. And I'm really not focusing on it, not in a bad way, but in a good way, because as you said at the beginning of this interview, these are not normal times. I can't focus on the show next week. I'm focusing on myself as a performer. And I'm focusing on it like as if this week I'm already, instead of just using the theater to just work and take it easy, I'm running the show as if I had a show every evening, starting tonight, but just for my collaborators and maybe one or two, you know, very, very private invitations. So it's like maximum 5 people just watching, mm-hmm. and it's really just rehearsal. But I'm doing it as if it's a show. And then I'm thinking of next week as if we got a prolongation.
Right.
Do you know what I think? Not that the performance would be any less. It would be even more exciting. But I just couldn't handle that disappointment. So I'm thinking of it as we don't know what's going to happen next week. If we have shows, I'm ready for it. And that's why I'm doing that this week. And then I'm going to be ready. You know, I mean, I've done, when I worked with Calvin Catals or other, I've done shows where we do runs of 5 weeks and sometimes then they say 6 weeks. So I said, you can't think you're going to be tired after a week if you've done this, even though I'm 60 now, I'm going to be ready for it. So that's psychologically, I can't get excited about next week. Otherwise, it wouldn't be healthy for me mentally. I'm thinking of it as, I really hope we get this prolongation, if I could say that.
I hope you get what you need and that you're satisfied with the end result, Heather, because it sounds like you've been working on this and you've put a lot of thought into it. And I think whoever gets to see this is going to be really blessed to see the performance.
Thank you so much. And I have to say also that, you know, we're not just doing, we're not just dancing around this week. We're also putting together documentation and everything. So we're ready to really give this, as my production director, Mario Brier, said, he says, we're having everything. Everything is going to be in place technically so that we can promote this show if it doesn't get seen this time. So that we're really going to do everything that we didn't do 2 years of work for it to not be seen. So, and I think, you know, that's what everybody's kind of living with now who has created work that got canceled. There's so many of us. Yeah.
Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me, Heather. It's been a real pleasure.
Yeah, it was a real pleasure for me too. Great. Thank you so much, Sarah.
That was Heather Ma. At the moment of recording, Heather's show is slated for November 24th to 28th, but it's not clear if live venues like the Mai will be able to reopen. But you can find out more about Pomegranate at the Mai's website, m-a-i.qc.ca. I'm Sarah DeAy, and you're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, coming to you from my home yet again this week. Still to come, Kenny Struli was raised on a farm in the Eastern Townships, but he always wanted to be a city boy. In his solo show, he shares his tale of growing up with an eccentric but loving grandmother, and now he heads back to his family farm to tell the story again. It has been clear for a long time now that we need to see and produce more diverse stories and hire more artists from different backgrounds. That search for diversity has heated up, especially in the past few months, following the outcry over the death of George Floyd and others, and amid repeated calls for reconciliation and greater representation in media landscapes that are, for lack of a better expression, very white. Talisman Theatre in Montreal presents English translations of French works created in Quebec, but this year, something different. Artistic and executive director Lynn Paquette has actually commissioned a work for the first time with the aim of tackling sexism and diversity. The result is Habibi's Angels, Commission Impossible, by writers Kalali Dalton and Hoda Adra. It's a meta-theater piece set in Montreal, a la Charlie's Angels, with characters under the command of Habibi, an unseen voice who lives off of content. The cast and crew is composed of women from diverse backgrounds who dare to ask whether, in the goal of democratizing the arts, whether they have been handed token roles for themselves. Director Sophie G says Habibi's Angels is unlike any other play she's seen about identity politics, calling it hilarious, wild, empowering, and not the quote trauma porn one might expect. Sophie and one of the performers, Shadia Kikonjo, spoke to me recently. They are slated to perform next week at La Chapelle Scène Contemporaine if all goes to plan, and if not, the show will eventually be online. Hello, Shadia and Sophie. Welcome to Upstage. Thank you so much for taking the time. How are you both doing?
You go ahead, Shadia.
Oh, I'm doing well. I mean, I just came from like a five hour Zoom thing, but I'm good.
Oh dear. Oh my gosh.
Oh my God.
You're zoomed out.
It's the new normal.
This is a busy day for you. And I'll just mention we're not on Zoom. We're on Facebook Messenger, and we're just talking. We're just doing an audio chat, or as we used to say, a phone call. So hopefully that's a little bit easier.
And yeah, there's something tiring about being like having the camera on and like sitting in front of the computer and people seeing you. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I much prefer a telephone call.
Absolutely.
Or audio call.
I'm so intrigued by the play because the whole concept of what you're doing, the creators and the performers are wrestling with the whole raison d'être of why you're there in Habibi's Angels. Maybe the starting point we can go from is from you, Sophie, as the director. Maybe you can just walk me through, since the full title is Habibi's Angels, Commission Impossible. It starts with a commission, right? Can you walk me through how the show is developed?
What really excited me about the play was, after a few kind of stumbles, Kalali and Hoda decided to just tackle the problem of the commission itself. It's like, how can you put together just like women of color and just say, make a play? Mm-hmm. And then for the people tasked with this, it's like, okay, so you just want us because of who we are, and we know that there's like a big funding incentive to work with us, and how do we deal with it? And if we go along with it, does that make us complicit, or can we use being tokenized to our advantage?
Okay, so it's very meta. And do you feel like, especially in the moment we are in now, where people are trying to be more aware and to push different storylines forward, there's work to be done, as a lot of people say, to bring stories from people, persons of color and women of color, to the forefront, right? And so do you find that you didn't just start working in the last couple of months, right? You guys have careers and you've been working on your craft. And so I was just curious if it gets annoying sometimes or strange, do you get this impression that people will always be expecting you to be creating stories about identity or belonging, or talking about those themes? I'm not sure if there's that expectation from other people.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. Well, you know, I haven't really professionally done acting for a very long time. I graduated university in 2019, mm-hmm. and you know, my problem was the opposite, where I was screaming to the mountaintops, talking about like, can we do stories that are not, you know, white focused? Right. You know, that was more my concern. That was more my experience. And I just started this professionally, and the plays that I've received, like been able to do, have been extremely interesting. And, not entirely focused on my identity and who I am as an individual, but I found that the stories did not oppress me or use me for my skin color, mm-hmm. for my heritage, my culture, my sexuality. Like, lately, that's what's been my experience, but the majority of the time, I've just been shouting about we need more stories. But I think it's also based on the environment that I was in, and just, you know, based on who was around. Is it exhausting? It's absolutely exhausting. It's consuming, because I have to talk about things that are traumatic. I have to try to prove to you, like, why this is important, why we should look like we should have stories of this, of that. I get a little touchy when stories of people of color, when it's primarily trauma porn. That's where I'm very concerned and very iffy with it. Like, I'm just not here for it. And what I found about this project was, what I found really interesting is that the project talks about oppression and things that women of color experiences, but it doesn't provide that trauma porn that I find within this industry when it comes to stories of people of color, what we're looking for.
Right.
Yeah.
And actually, like, the character Habibi is trying to get trauma porn, right? Like, that's what Habibi feeds on, but it's like the angels can defeat Habibi that way. And I think in the initial conversations, and I what I find very interesting is in the cast and crew, there's different generations of, or different ages of women, mm-hmm. and people of color, in that like Shadia is a recent graduate, but then we have Emily Feluz, who is who has been in the industry for 25 years, and now she's saying, okay, like, suddenly I'm in fashion, but I've been around for a long time. And I graduated school, oh gosh, 8 years ago. And, you know, so I didn't struggle as long as Emily, but, like, all of us have really tried to find our place. And it's only recently that we're getting these projects. And we're thankful for it. But somebody else in the room had said, you know, I don't get my grants unless I do a piece about my heritage. And that's really too bad, right? Like, that mm-hmm. we want to be able to talk about everything. We don't just want to talk about, like, our cultural identity. Like, that's not what we think about 24/7.
Mm-hmm. Speaking with director Sophie G and Shadia Kikonjo, part of the cast of Habibi's Angels, commissioned Impossible. And I'm feeling really silly because I'm just putting together that it's Charlie's Angels. Is I read through the press release back and forth, and I'm just connecting this. So this is so silly of me. Sophie, so you just touched on Habibi as a character. So let's before we let you go, can you guys just walk me through a bit about what the story is itself? Because Habibi, I love this expression of a female story factory machine, a diverse play factory. This is Habibi's project.
Yes, Habibi basically. Well, there's three layers to the play, mm-hmm. but in this. The Habibi layer and the Habibi and Angels layer. Habibi is somebody who commissions these four angels to make a play for them. And so they're tasked as women of color that to make a piece. And Habibi says that, you know, it's going to be beneficial for both of them, and that they'll take lots of pictures for social media. It's just to make Habibi look good.
Okay.
And Habibi wants, like, trauma porn. He wants to know about their plight as women of color. Or I say he because sometimes it's, but Habibi is played by a woman, Fons mm-hmm. Bonan. So I should actually say she. Habibi's gender is kind of not
ambiguous.
Really determined. Yeah, but.
And we only hear uh-huh. France, right? That's kind of like an omnipresent voice.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And the idea the writers took from Charlie's Angels is that these women, those three women, were kind of sold as some kind of model of feminism that they were, you know, badass and glamorous. But they were really like working for a man under all that. And so how do they find their own independence? And so here we have the angels who are, you'll see from the video, I guess, because I don't think we're able to perform it live in front of an audience, that is. But they are like a play on women of color. Like they have super, super, super bright clothing on. And they're like a visible minority. And they've been tasked as these kind of superheroes by this unknown person, Habibi, to make a play to kind of capitalize on the fact that they are women of color.
I'm speaking with you on Monday, November 16th. So ideally, this will be happening next week. But you just touched on whether you're going to be doing it live or not, or performing to an audience at home. What's going through your mind with this uncertainty as artists right now, where we kind of have to wait on the government to make up its mind about whether to allow live arts performances?
Well, it's, at least for me, it's just it's the new reality. It's not fun to be on the edge of your seat waiting for days on end of a decision to perform on a project that you've been in and practiced and rehearsed for 2 months. Like, it's not the greatest feeling, but, you know, we're in a pandemic. Like, the circumstances of the circumstances of the world, there's not much we can do. So yeah, I'm trying to go with the flow, not to add puns in or anything, but I'm just trying to, you know, center my energy and just go with the flow and accept, you know, the realities of the world, and we just have to accommodate to it. At least that's my viewpoint on it.
I think that's a good view to take. Sophie, how about you?
Well, I feel very weird about, I mean, the whole rehearsal process is so different because of masking and distancing. But I think it's a precious time to think about process and not necessarily product. And for that reason, it's nice. But of course, we work to share these things. And as a live artist, that is like an essential part of what we do, and to have that taken out feels really weird. But having said that, I don't know. I work in theater, and I don't know if I would go to theater, and I don't know if I should say that. You know, like it's very tight, this whole pandemic. So, do I need to go see live performance? I would love to see live performance. Of course, I'm missing it so much, but I want to be safe as well. And, and I know this is way safer. Like, everybody's sitting facing the same direction. Nobody's talking. So it should be safe, but, you know, it's winter time and we can't open windows and ventilate. I don't know. I don't know if it's what we should be doing. Oh, gosh. I hope I don't get in trouble for saying that.
Don't worry. You're speaking to a concern, I think, that everybody has. It's really natural.
And also, yeah, like for the actors, they don't have masks on. Like, is it worth risking our health right now? You're like, no.
Well, Shadia and Sophie, it's been an absolute pleasure to speak with both of you, and the topics are so fascinating. I hope there'll be other chances in the future to talk about this, and there's just so much to be seen. So whether you see it in person or online, I can't wait for people to digest this show and talk about it amongst themselves, whether in person or via chat. And I thank you so much for giving me some of your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Some Charlie's Angels 2000 remix for Habibi's Angels. That was director Sophie G and actor Shadia Kikonjo of Habibi's Angels, Commission Impossible, a bilingual production with subtitles presented by Talisman Theater in its first ever commission play. The show is slated to be performed live November 23rd to December 5th, streaming online as of December 1st. As of recording, it's not clear if live performance spaces will be allowed to reopen on Monday. For more information about the show, visit lachapelle.org and talisman-theater.com. I'm Sarah DeA. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, coming to you from my home yet again this week. Kenny Struley was raised on a farm outside of Montreal near beautiful Brome in the Eastern Townships, but he always wanted to head to the big city, and now he's living the dream. Today he is artistic producer at Mainline Theatre, and you may have spotted him as the narrator in the Rocky Horror musical, or seen him hosting many of the events at the Fringe Fest, a straight-laced yet elastic performer decked out in a tux and bow tie. Kenny's first play, City Boy, explored his family's story, but in his first solo show, Mal Understood, he introduces his Mutter, his strict and tough Swiss-German grandmother who has an eye on everything Kenny does, whether good or bad. Mal Understood was first performed at the Mini Main last year, and now Kenny is sharing a shortened version filmed on that very farm. Now available to stream and pay what you think. Kenny Struley spoke with me earlier this week. Good evening, Kenny. Welcome back to Upstage. How have you been these last couple of months?
I've been good. Thank you for having me.
It's nice to speak with you again. How are things going over at Mainline Theater?
Really well. We're keeping ourselves busy with a lot of fun things. So tomorrow, Amy's going to be getting her grant writing workshop. And on Thursday, we're going to be having our Super Happy La Fun Time, which is an activity we did when the pandemic started. And we just did it so that we could talk to our volunteers and our community and just have a great time for like 90 minutes of talk. And we played games, like we found this game called the What Would You Rather? And I sort of asked a question that makes like a really nice debate online. It's really a lot of fun.
I guess it's really important, especially for Mainline, which is really so community focused. There's people who are volunteering. A lot of people who are performing at Mainline and using the studio space are also part of the community. It's important to keep those ties going.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's so important to continue those connections. You know, we didn't have our usual Fringe Festival, so there wasn't that opportunity for our people to come and meet up and meet each other. You know, I received a lot of texts during this pandemic from friends who usually just stop by at Mainline during the day to just see what's going on, or they have like an hour and they just want to chill before going to another meeting and something. And I think that part's missing. You know, there's no like online platform for that to happen, you know?
Well, we're here to talk about not just Mainline Theater, but a project of your own, Kenny, which I got to enjoy several months back. Feels like last decade. But you finally put on a one-man show. And is it interesting for you as someone who's kind of known for being one of the faces of Mainline, doing more administrative things? Do people go, oh, you're a performer too? Like, are people meshing those two identities together?
Yeah, I mean, it's always been kind of a goal of mine. I remember when I graduated from theater school in Dawson College in 2013, I remember saying to myself, whatever I do, I want to work in this community, you know? So I always did some acting on the side, and then I entered more of the production side of things with Mainline and the Fringe Festival. So this kind of, like, going back to stage, this Mal Understood show that was done in February, was kind of like, yeah, like a reminder to the community that, like, by the way, I also can create artistic shows and be on the stage and do those things, you know? So it was really, it's a real joy to actually tell, like, my family story, and especially focused around my grandmother who kind of raised me. It's really nice to bring that also home to Mainline. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Mal Understood was a really lovely piece, and it was largely about growing up for you on a farm in the Eastern Townships and your overbearing, fascinating Swiss-German grandmother. Can we talk about her for a little bit?
For sure. For sure. I mean, she is definitely a character. You know, she has a very thick Swiss-German accent. And it's her way or the highway is what I remember when I was a child. And she really she really wanted to push on the idea that I had to learn culture where she came from, and it was really important for that. And you know, as a child, I really didn't want to believe that. I was having a hard time learning French because I had to go to French school and spoke English at home, so that was like a third language that was now there. It was just awful. I have to be honest with you, it was really hard learning a third language. But I remember when I got older, I visited Switzerland with her, and it was just so incredible to actually see where she was from and see all of her family and stuff like that. And I finally understood the things I wanted to understand. And I think from there, I kind of based off this show and continued building it.
So what kind of things did you do, have you been working on to develop the piece further? Because it's always interesting to know about how something is, even though you're presenting it to a paying audience, it's almost still always kind of a work in progress, right?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, what was interesting is that Canada Council for the Arts took out this initiative because of the pandemic, which was a digital original, and they were sort of like looking for performing artists to take work that they had already created and turn it into some kind of virtual performance, whether it was filming it, whether it was creating a whole new piece that was based off of it or not even. But it was just because artists kind of busy and getting them to do some work. So we applied and we were fortunate enough to be selected, which I got to tell you, our team was freaking out when I got the email and I went into the portal and it was the CCA portal, and it was just like, you have been accepted for the grant. And I was like, what is this? I've never seen this. So, you know, for us, in terms of changing the piece, I sat down with my dramaturg, Jesse Song, and we had a meeting, and it wasn't really developing the piece that was already created, but it was creating something new out of it. You know, it is still the same show, but I wouldn't call it a show. I'd call it more of a virtual performance experience because it is different. You know, it is an ode to its live performance. When we were going down with the ideas, I remember Rebecca Zureshi, my production manager, and Amy Blackmore, the fantastic director, we sat down in a Zoom meeting, and we sort of had a conversation on how are we going to make this possible. And we went through so many phases of it where it was like, okay, why don't we just do one time only? You sit down, Kenny's going to do it live from Black Rome, from his parents' place. We wanted to do that, and then what happened is we realized the internet wasn't great there, so it wouldn't have been possible to broadcast it specifically there, and we didn't really want to invest in getting more internet there. We're just like, no, let's figure out. But Amy asked me to take pictures of everything we did, because Rebecca and I went down. Amy was in London, Ontario at that point, and she was saying to me that, can you just get pictures and videos of the place? I have to imagine it. So
right.
I took pictures of the farm, and I took pictures of my parents' place. I took pictures of my grandmother's basement, and I just put that all in Google Drive, sent it to her, and then she was like, we need to create a, like, small film version of this where you're just at different locations. And it's really, I knew that the country was beautiful, but hearing my city friends who are watching it and they're seeing the farm, and also my country friends who have not been to my parents' farm, for them to visualize it and see the farm, it's a whole different experience because it's so beautiful. It's so, like, grandiose, and the farm and everything. There's a shot where you can see the farm behind me. It's one of my favorites. It's during the Rufus scene, and it's just beautiful. It's just beautiful sights and everything.
And so that's kind of reconfirmed your own passion and appreciation for, you know, where you came from, too.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know what I find really interesting is that I remember as a kid being like, I'm never going to go back to the farm. I hate the farm so much, you know? It was just not for me. And then suddenly, doing this project and going back down to the farm, I was like, oh, this is my, like, way of living the farm, but in my way. You know, it's Ken's way of appreciating the farm. Not working on it all the time, but bringing my artistic side back home was really what this project allowed me to do.
Speaking with Kenny Struli, who has written and performed in Malunderstood, originally a solo stage show that you might have seen in the past couple months pre-pandemic, now it's available online. And we should mention it's also shorter. You are talking about this as being a different kind of beast, a different kind of performance. Was making it a shorter piece part of the conditions of the grant that you had, or is that just what you wanted to do?
It wasn't a condition of the grant. No, it was really, we talked about it and we said, how do we keep people watching the video? because we're in pandemic mode. You know, a lot of people are burnt from their Zoom meetings all day and are tired of sitting in front of their screen. So maybe they're reading a book at night or they're just getting away from technology. So we were trying to figure out how to make it like a bit shorter, but keep the integrity of the show. And my friend Sean Colby, who filmed and edited the entire process, thank you for him. He's so incredible. He's a friend I met in college. Came down to Montreal. He was supposed to be on set for something, and he was. But then while he was down, he had some days off. And I was like, do you have your gear? And he's like, yeah. So we went down. We shot for 3 days in my hometown with him.
Wow.
He's so generous. He's giving me all this time to do that. But he was really, in the editing process, he also, like, he cut things here and there. He was like, you know, this is film, and there's a lot of lines, so let's try to eliminate a little bit of things so that we can focus on the core of the story and it still gets across, you know? I think that's interesting, is that with theater, you know, I repeated a lot of the things, but with this film version, it's very much, like, to the point, and it's fast sometimes, and yeah.
Was it kind of fun to be shooting in your hometown? And when did you film on your farm as well?
Yeah. I mean, I filmed across the entire farm. You know, there's a shot right beside the cornfield. I think one of my favorite shoots was actually in my kitchen where I grew up. And my mom and sister were there that day. And they were both like, oh, you're going to film in here? Okay. And then, like, I wish someone could film, like, backstage what was going
yeah.
on. Because, like, I was, like, on the area that we were filming. But then my family, my sister and mom were like on the side, like just trying to peek in, looking in without being on camera. And I thought that was like very interesting to see. And like, it's also, I think for me, it was also sort of showing them what I do in a daily basis, you know, like this is the life of an artist. You know, I've seen the life of a farmer, but they've never really witnessed the life of an artist in front of them, you know, and understanding the process that like, I can't tell you the number of times my dad, after we shot in August, he was like, okay, so when is it ready? And I was like, well, it's not, it's taking time then. He was just like, well, that makes no sense. Come on, it's just the movie, make it happen. You know, and I think when he saw it, he was so impressed with the quality of everything. And I said to him, like, that's what takes time. All this, the process of sending it back and forth between the team and seeing, like, getting feedback, like, that's what makes it good, you know? The analogy I use with my dad's trying to make him understand is like, he said, you know that when you plant a cornfield, it doesn't grow the next day. It takes time. So, yeah.
Kenny explains his craft to his parents. I don't know. There might be another story in there. Another play.
Absolutely. My family has such a bunch of characters. I'd love to do a show about each of them. They're just so lovely.
So, Kenny, tell me about the process of getting this online. How can we see it? I saw something about pay what you can, pay what you decide.
Mm-hmm.
What do you want people to decide on? What would be a good amount?
Well, you know, I really, when we decided to do this process, we were thinking about, you know, making it accessible to everyone. So we've assigned like a little partnership with We Show Up. And it's a ticketing system that usually in the past, like, people would use for live shows, where you just go, and if you see the show, you get a link afterwards to say, how much do you think it's worth? How much would you like to give? And you can choose how much you give. And it's the same thing with this. Simply, you sign up through our We Show Up app, which is available on Facebook on the Malunderstood Virtual Performance event. And from there, you know, you really, you click on the event, you sign up, you click on any of the dates. That's the important thing, is that you choose any of those dates. As soon as you purchase that link, which, and I say purchase a quotation mark, but you can't see me, you're paying $0 as soon as you get it, and you'll get the link right away. But once you watch it, after that, you get another email afterwards saying, thank you for watching. How much would you like to give? And they're suggested between $25 and $10. But there's also a custom button for you to put anything you desire to put, you know. Some people have put $10, some people have put $25. I received also a $50 donation. Also, people have given nothing, and that's really okay, too. It's really just for allowing people to see the show.
Is it a weird thing to, it's kind of the reverse of what you would normally do, and for you, you're actually someone who's often at the box office at Mainline, not all the time, but you have mm-hmm. been the person taking the money for the tickets, giving them to somebody and saying, you can walk right through or give us a couple of minutes, but here the process is reversed. You've done this, all this work, And now you get a note sent to the audience saying, you know, if you want to chip in, here's what you can give. How does that feel?
I mean, it feels really good. I think, you know, it's the right decision to do because I think, you know, people want to see art. It's a bit of a weird time, you know, with the pandemic and people are trying to stay close with their budgets and stuff like that. But, you know, it's also art. And I think the value of art is super important as well. You know, I don't want to tell people to go away if they don't have money, and I don't want to say no to money that could support my next production that we do, or to support this one and the lovely artists that we worked with. You know, we receive the beautiful grants from Canada Council for the Arts, but we can always support artists even more. So, you know, if someone is willing to give a bit of funds, I'll, you know, it's always going to the artists, and I love that fact.
Kenny, it's been really nice to check in with you and to find out about the production. I can't wait to watch it.
Thank you. I hope you enjoy it, and thank you for having me, Sarah.
That was Kenny Strulli of Mainline Theatre and The Fringe talking about the adaptation of his solo show, Mal Understood. The filmed version is only 18 minutes long. You can see it online and pay what you think. Look up Kenny on the website app.weshowup.io. Or visit him online at kennystrulli.ca. That's kennystrulli.ca. You can also find Mal Understood as a Facebook event with a link to watch the show. You have been listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca on November 19th, 2020, before the final word on what's happening later in December for the Christmas holidays and whether the restrictions for the Red Zone in Montreal and other areas are going to be lifted. Tonight you heard my guests, Sophie G and Shadia Kikonjo of Habibi's Angels, Commission Impossible, Heather Ma of Pomegranate, and Kenny Strulli of Mal Understood. A huge thank you to all of my guests. If you're looking for something to do this weekend, check out Imago Theater's Eco Anxiety series. We learned about it last week. This weekend's short play online is Absolutely Nothing of Any Meaning by Sunny Drake, available as of today until November 22nd. Centaur Theater is also presenting Tarragon Theater's interpretation of the Morris Panitch show Seven Stories, about a man who's ready to jump, except he can't help but be embroiled while he eavesdrops on his neighbor's activities. And there's also several film festivals going on, Cinemania, the Rencontre Internationale des Documentaires de Montréal, as well as the LGBTQ Film Festival Now On. A lot of these festivals are sharing all of their movies to stream online for free or for a fee, so have fun with that. And saving the best for last, a very happy birthday to Geordie Theater, theater for young people and their families. They are celebrating 40 years with a party playlist this Saturday, a four-hour live stream from their brand new location, Espace Geordie, located in Little Italy. Artistic director Mike Payette is going to be hosting, and a lot of interviews. There'll be interviews and performances and chats with people who have participated in productions over the years from a variety of different walks of life. There'll be throat singing, a DJ mix, story from Matt Goldberg of Confabulation, and also of interest, there is an ongoing online auction. It started a couple of days ago. You can bid on items that include gift certificates, fashion items, jewelry as well. If you want more, please visit them online at geordie.ca. Here's to 40 more years. Actually, here's to many more years to a Geordie Theater fundraising event happening this Saturday and to commemorate their 40th anniversary. You can hear past episodes of Upstage at ckut.ca under archives. Thank you to Tamara and Spencer at CKUT for making sure this show gets to air. And thank you for tuning in. I'm your host, Sarah Day. Speak with you next time on Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at ckut.ca. Until next time, stay safe.
La pandémie de COVID-19 est une situation sérieuse. Il faut continuer d'appliquer toutes les mesures de santé publique. Suivez les consignes locales sur les rassemblements, pratiquez la distanciation physique, lavez vos mains, portez un masque et téléchargez l'appli Alerte COVID. Si vous avez des symptômes, même légers, restez à la maison. Protégeons-nous les uns les autres.
Détails au canada.ca/le coronavirus ou au 1-833-784-4397. Un message du gouvernement du Canada.
When your parents need your help, you're there. When your kids say something's wrong, you're there. When your friends have a rough day, you're there. Be there for yourself the way you're there for others, as it's normal for these uncertain times to bring out negative emotions or anxiety. If you're finding it difficult to carry out daily tasks, there are solutions. Visit quebec.ca/gettingbetter or call Info Social 811. A message from the gouvernement du Québec.
CKUT Radio.
19th edition of Grey Matters. Tonight from Alternative Radio down in Boulder, Colorado, we have a lecture by Chris Hedges entitled Beyond the Politics of Despair. It was delivered in Troy, New York on October 16th, 2020. Chris Hedges is an award-winning journalist who has reported from the Balkans, the Middle East, and Central America. He's the author of many books, including Death of the Liberal Class, Wages of Rebellion, and America, the Farewell Tour. So without further ado, here's tonight's edition of Grey Matters, the politics beyond the politics of despair by Chris Hedges.
All we do must have the single aim of crippling the power of the ruling elites in the hopes of new systems of governance that can implement the radical reforms to save us and the world. The most difficult existential dilemma we face is to at once acknowledge the bleakness before us and act, to refuse to succumb to cynicism and despair.
That's Chris Hedges, and this is Alternative Radio. I'm David Barsamian. This edition of AR features Chris Hedges on Beyond the Politics of Despair. Despair. We all experience it. It can lead to demoralization. What's the antidote? Engagement. Finding kindred spirits and acting collectively. Building bonds of solidarity. Working toward the common good. John Lewis, longtime George